1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being back once again. We have a lot to get to in this edition of the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. And if I hadn't said it in a while, thanks again for tuning in. Certainly appreciate it. Very, very much appreciate it. It's my favorite thing. When you tune in, interact, we get to talk about Mariners baseball. And, of course, I haven't given these out in a while. I have some catch-up to do as well. A couple of things coming out later this week that you've sent me that I've been working on. But at Gary Hill Jr. on Twitter, I'm on there just about all day. So you can always reach me there. Or GaryHillPXP@gmail.com, the email address to reach me as well. You can get the podcast, you know, the website, SeattleMariners.com. Go to fans, scroll down to podcasts. You can find it on iTunes as well. And I mentioned this once in a while, but I always appreciate some stars and some ratings. It helps us. It helps us grow. We've grown already, but we want to keep on growing. So I appreciate the feedback you can leave on iTunes as well. It does make a difference. So I appreciate that. And this is going to be a fun one to talk about. So Josh Kearns is going to be here. And his feature this week is sensational. I mean, they're all good. The series has been fabulous all season. But I love this one. Have you ever wondered how many baseballs get used during one game? And what happens to baseballs before the game? You're going to get those answers coming up. I think you're going to be surprised about how many baseballs are used in one game. So I don't want to give it away. So that comes up in a few minutes. We're going to hear from the Mariners rookie, Shannon Dreyer. Gets to sit down with second baseman slash shortstop, although we haven't seen him there yet, slash center fielder, Ketel Marte. So that comes up in a few minutes, and it's excellent. We get to know him a little bit. Also coming up, bullpen banter, this time with David Rollins. We had to push it back with the big show yesterday with all the Taiwan Walker stuff. So bullpen banter is going to be here in a few minutes as well. And we get a chance to talk about a real wild game. You know, I always feel like when you visit a new place or a place you haven't been to in a while or a place you rarely go, I always feel like you want to get the essence of the place. Like if you're in New York, I mean, Central Park is a must. Times Square, of course. I mean, those things have to happen if you're visiting New York. And I feel the same way about Coors Field. And I think the Mariners got the full Coors Field experience in the ballgame yesterday. A wild game where no lead is safe and runs can be scored at the drop of the hat. I just feel like they got the full experience. And for Felix Hernandez, you know, this won't go down as his greatest start in his career. But to me, it definitely earns you the T-shirt that reads, "I survived pitching at Coors Field." I don't know if they give those T-shirts out, but they should. Anytime you pitch 6-plus and give up 4 earned or less, you really earn that T-shirt at Coors Field. It's funny because Coors Field, known, of course, for the home runs. I mean, the ball flies out, thin air, everything else. But to me, the most challenging aspect of Coors Field for a pitcher is just how massive the field is, the outfield. Walls push back, and, I mean, so many bleeders and bloopers and parachute jobs. I mean, that's what's most frustrating. You could be completely on your game. A couple of just jam shots drop into the outfield with the outfielders playing back, two of those, and then a 3-run home run. I mean, that's what makes that place so difficult. Or one put in the gap and the guy's running forever with extra bases. It's tough. There's not a lot of margin for error, especially you just can't issue free passes. That makes things, that really compounds things. But it's a tough place to pitch. But Felix Hernandez, you know, he pitched well. You look at his final line, he gives up 11 hits, but I think you'd take just about 7 innings and 4 runs just about any time from a starter at Coors Field against a good offense.
The Kings 1-2, strike 3 called. He gets them with a fastball. And LeMahieu exits the batter's box slowly wearing the golden sombrero courtesy of the King.
Poor LeMahieu. He fans 5 times in the game. That ties the most in a game against the Mariners. 5 strikeouts in 1 game. And as Jeff Evans pointed out, it's the only time it hasn't happened in a non-extra inning game. I mean, he only got 5 at-bats, and he K'd 5 times. LeMahieu's a good hitter, all-star. He's having a really good year, over 300. I mean, quietly. You know, Colorado, with Tulowitzki gone, he's kind of the, along with Carlos Gonzalez, kind of the big names of that offense. But they have some very underrated players. I already think Nolan Arenado is one of the best third basemen in the game of baseball. I don't know how many, I don't know how much attention he gets, but you know, batting .278 on the year with massive power to go along with it. LeMahieu has had an excellent season. Hundley's had a good year as the catcher. He had 3 hits again yesterday. And Blackman has been one of the best leadoff men in the National League. So despite the loss of Tulowitzki, they pack a punch, especially in that ballpark. But from LeMahieu, 5 punch-outs. He joins 3 others. Prince Fielder in 2013 struck out 5 times against the Mariners. Ron Karkovice in 1996 and Dean Ballmer in 1991, the 4 players to fan 5 times against the Seattle Mariners. And probably not shocking, LeMahieu and Fielder, those were Felix Hernandez starts. Karkovice and Ballmer, those were Randy Johnson starts. So there you go. A tough day for LeMahieu. But the Mariners, they really poured it on early in this ballgame. Jesus Montero cracked a double.
The pitch, Montero is swinging, a line drive into the gap in left center field. This one all the way to the wall. Cano running third, he'll score. Heading for third is Smith, being waved in by Rich Donnelly. Smith will score. The throw in by Blackman, cut off by Jose Reyes. And in its second goes Jesus Montero with a 2-out, 2-run double. And it's now the Mariners 3. And the Rockies nothing here in the top of the first inning.
And they were back at it in the second. Kyle Seager going yard.
The 0-1 to Kyle, swing and a fly ball deep into the gap in right center field. Going. Goodbye, baseball. Off the back wall of the Mariner bullpen. Holy smokes, Kyle Seager with his 16th home run of the season. And it gives the Mariners a 5-1 lead.
Next batter, Nelson Cruz, looking for number 30.
The 3-1 swing and a line drive deep left center field, and this baby's gone. Goodbye, baseball. In and out of the seats in left center field. Nelson Cruz, more of a line shot home run. Cruz with his 30th home run of the season, and he now has hit home runs in 1, 2, 3, 4 consecutive games. How about that?
4 straight games for the second time this season, which is pretty remarkable. Cruz now hitting .321 with 30 blasts. Only 4 other Mariners in M's history have finished a season with 30-plus home runs, batting .300 or better. Ken Griffey Jr. did it 4 times. Alex Rodriguez did it 3 times. Edgar did it once. Brett Boone did it once. So just 4 guys in Mariners history have done that, and he is well on pace. He's already bashed 30 homers. What a year for Nelson Cruz. We keep talking about it, and he just continues to surge. His hitting streak continued. 3 more hits in the ball game. He had 3 hits. Seager had 3 hits. He scored 3 runs. Cano had 2 hits, and Brad Miller had 3 hits as well. He had a very nice ball game. He homered in the third.
Swing and a line drive, pelted left field. Parker looking up, and this is over the wall for a home run. Miller, an opposite field laser beam just over the yellow piping in left field, and it's the 3rd Mariners homer. 7-1 Seattle.
7-1 at that point, but Colorado would get 2 in the 4th, 1 more in the 6th. Felix would be done. The King would go 6 2/3, 11 hits, 4 runs, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, 111 pitches. And then Colorado, they make a run at things in the bottom of the ninth. They put 3 on the board, were 1 away from the tie, and they were looking for the win. Carson Smith was trying to close it down.
And the 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss, strike 3, and he got him for the second out of the inning. Carson Smith strikes out McHenry. 2 down for the Rockies here in the bottom of the ninth inning. He needed the strikeout, and he got it. He strikes out Michael McHenry.
Yeah, and then he'd get – that was a huge out. Huge out for Carson Smith. And he would get the final out of the ball game in the bottom of the ninth. He gets Blackman to fly out to center field. And that was the ball game. The Mariners get the victory, 8-7 in Colorado. Just how you would expect a game in Colorado to go. The win to Felix, lucky number 13. Carson Smith locks down his 10th save. Nelson Cruz, what can you say? He homers again, 3 more hits. And, of course, after the game, pretty ho-hum about his own performance. That's who he is. He's just – he doesn't talk about himself, loves to talk about teammates, about himself. He's just very low-key, very low-key.
Yeah, we just got to get runs, you know. I mean, 4, I guess, is not enough. It was today, but it was pretty close. Tomorrow we know what to expect, you know. So I guess for me and the other guys, you know, we got the experience now with the ballpark. What to look for?
30 home runs on the season. A lot of people would wonder how many you would get playing in Seattle and playing in this division. I mean, do you feel like it's an accomplishment, obviously, to get 30 this early in the season?
I just played my game, you know, every day, you know, whatever happens, it happens. But, I mean, the important thing here is the W, you know, and that's the only thing that I care.
You've had another streak like this with the 4 home runs before earlier. Is it the same for you at the plate right now? Is it worse earlier in the season?
I feel like my approach is better now than what it was. And it's not like only getting homers, you know, I can get the line dry, so... almost whatever the pitch is pitch. You know, I can go there and hit it.
You mentioned a second ago, now you know what this park is and what to do here. How different is that from other parks?
I mean, the ball will definitely carry, you know, and today 4 was enough, you know, but at one point it looked like it wasn't. So you just have to go there and compete. Hopefully, we know we get the W tomorrow too.
And then Felix, after the game, he talked about his pitching. He also talked about his offense, how he felt about swinging the bat.
What's it like pitching here?
They're a little different. I mean, high altitude and you get tired real quick. But that was fine. It was fine.
You're stuffed. I mean, they say sometimes the movement isn't the same here. Did you see any difference or have to make any adjustments?
I will say, I mean, I had a good stuff. I had a good fastball. But I think I was up in the sun a little bit. And that's why they get a lot of hits. But I was able to make pitch when I need to.
You were able to make enough down to keep in the ballpark.
What? Oh, well, it was 11 hits, so. But it was like not easy inning, and that was every time I just got to, you know, keep the ball down and make good pitches.
Blitz said he thought in this park, he thought you pitched very, very well. How do you judge it?
You know me, and I'm not pleased. We win, that's the most important thing. We win, but I'm not pleased at my performance.
Where you're hitting?
Last one was really good. Last one I hit really good.
Really good?
Really good.
Okay.
But it was just try, you know, it was a different approach. No, it was a different approach. I'm not trying to do too much. And the first two, I was trying to let kick, and I was like, I got to try, I can stay back. But I hit it really good.
I love Felix talking about hitting. The quote, not trying to do too much. That is so awesome. Felix talking about hitting. Something very cool happened in the ballgame, too. It seems like every time before Felix pitches, I'm on some sort of research project. And this one, I started to look at strikeouts before the age of 30. And I wanted to break it down. It's easy to find, you know, season age. But I wanted to break it down specifically to strikeouts before the actual 30th birthday to see where Felix was. And here's where he ended up after the game last night with the 9 punchouts. Walter Johnson has the most strikeouts before the age 30, 2,305. It's ridiculous. Some of the years he had, I mean, he got to the big leagues young, and he was pitching a lot of innings. You know, 300-plus Ks in a season. I mean, his numbers were out of control. Sam McDowell, the second most, 2,271. Burt Blyleven, third, 2,250. Going into last night, Nolan Ryan was fourth with 2,085. But last night, Felix passed him. Felix Hernandez now has the fourth most strikeouts in baseball history for any pitcher before the age of 30. Nine strikeouts, 2,091 in his career. So Felix is number four. Nolan Ryan is number five. Sandy Koufax is number six at 2,079. I'm just blown away. When I started to really look at that and look at those numbers, I mean, think about those names. Walter Johnson, Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, Burt Blyleven. Some of the best of the best this game has seen. And once again, Felix nestles his name right in there. I mean, fourth most strikeouts before the age of 30. It's just remarkable. It really is. And so impressive. He just continues to rack up the numbers and the accolades and everything else. Just so impressive. So the King does it once again. Nine punchouts in the game yesterday. Oh, by the way, one other thing, too. Just a quick note. I don't know how meaningful it is, but I find it interesting. Felix Hernandez now, after facing Colorado for the first time yesterday, he has faced all but two teams in Major League Baseball. One, the St. Louis Cardinals. Two, the Seattle Mariners. And here's hoping that Felix never, ever, ever faces the Seattle Mariners. He can face the St. Louis Cardinals at some point, but I think we all hope that one team is left off that list of teams he'll face in his Major League career. So all hail the King as he gets the win in Colorado yesterday. Now, let's talk about the center fielder for a second. Marte in center, getting his first Major League start there. Didn't see a ton of action, but made a nice catch.
The pitch, swing, and a high fly ball center field. Going back, Marte to the warning track, still drifting back. Reaches up, and he makes the catch up against the wall. Ketel Marte, 415 feet. From home plate, stayed with it. He made the catch on the ball hit by Hundley. Back to first goes Ben Paulson. And the kid, Ketel Marte, getting his first start in the big leagues out in center field. Drifting back, took a nice route.
Nice catch right there. So let's meet him. Here's Shannon Dreher with Ketel Marte.
Ketel Marte, and it's always exciting when you hear about a person who gets called up to the big leagues the first time. You were just telling us the story about how you found out that you were coming here, and for a minute you thought you were going somewhere else, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here, and thanks God for giving me the opportunity to be in the Billy and the Billy team. And then when Paddy Starr told me that I had to go to Billy, I was so emotional, and then I was so happy, almost crying. And I mean, good now.
He at first told you were going to Double A though, when he pulled you out of the game, didn't he?
I was almost crying when he told me that I had to go to Double A. And then when he told me that I got to go to Billy, oof, I was so happy. And then I don't know what I'm gonna do.
The first phone call was to your mom.
Oh, when I called my mom, she told me before, like 2 weeks ago, when I was in the future again, and she told me that you all have to play hard and working hard, and you go to Billy in maybe 1 week and 2 weeks. And when I called yesterday, she's crying. She's crying a lot.
Could you sleep last night?
No, I'm not.
No sleep.
No sleep. Early flight.
Early flight. And now you're here in beautiful Minnesota, and you got to spend some time out on the field earlier today getting some work at second base.
When I come in here, I come in here to do whatever I had to do, and then I come in just getting dressed and then go out, doing my work, and I'm good now. I'm good.
And you were in spring training, so you know a lot of these players.
I know a lot of this play because I see a lot of players before. And then, I'm feel so happy, and see what's going to happen today, tonight.
Okay, one of the interesting things we saw was in the last couple of weeks we found out you were playing a little bit of center field. Tell us about center field.
I mean, I played center field before when I was younger, I mean, when I was 16. And when I got my vacation in Dominican, I played center field in softball when we played softball. And then I think I feel comfortable there.
You play softball just for fun?
Yeah, it's my hobby.
It is your hobby, right?
Yeah, I play softball, that's it.
How's that different for you than baseball?
It's something different, you know, it's easy because when you got a vacation, you just have to get just have fun, and then we just play softball in Dominica to have fun, and then I think it's good.
We see your numbers hitting this year. What has been working for you at the plate?
Try to get a better swing. That's what I had to do. See my pitch, get a good contact, and see what's going to happen.
Now, you weren't alone coming up here. Jesus Montero was with you. What have you seen from him?
Oof. This guy, unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. I don't know. This guy, he working hard every day, and you see what's going to happen with him. And then I think he's going to be in the building for a long time, and then he's a good person, too.
Going to be nice to be over there and then to have him right over at first base. It'll be like...
It's like a Tacoma. I played second base. When I played second base in Tacoma, he played third base. And then you see what happened tonight. I got him in third base, like in Tacoma.
Absolutely. You look around here, what do you see? What's it like to look out at a big league field?
Oh, the field. Yeah. Different field is from Tacoma. It's different, you know. I don't know. Oh, my God. It's something different.
Something different. Something different. Well, hey, this is a big day for you, for your family. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And now you're going to love this one. Josh Kearns is back. This is one I talked about at the top. What happens to baseballs before the game? How many do they go through during the game? Here's Josh Kearns.
Whenever a ball gets fouled off into the stands, a lot of people get pretty excited. Matt Walcott, not so much.
You know, I watch Ichiro hit, foul off 10, 12 balls at a time, and I'm just like, Ichiro, what are you doing to me?
His disappointment is understandable. After all, it's been Matt's job since the 90s to prepare every single ball used in a game at Safeco Field.
I won't say it's the bane to my existence, but it's a little bit like being a mailman. I just know that the next day I'm going to have to do this all over again.
It's dirty work. As the Mariners umpire clubhouse manager, he gets upwards of 11 dozen balls in game shape every single day. After 31 seasons, though, he's certainly got it down. With his favorite music cranking, Matt sits on a couch in the umpire's clubhouse beneath the stand several hours before game time. He's flanked by boxes of brand new shiny baseballs on one side, a never-filling canvas bag of dull, slightly dirty balls on the other. Like a machine, he methodically grabs a new one, dips his fingers in a jar of a watery mix of mud, then precisely coats the ball with it, and finally rubs it down before tossing it into the bag.
The main thing is to try to keep the mud out of the seams of the ball, because obviously the pitchers want the biggest seams that they can get. And then I just try to make each baseball look the exact same. You don't want it too dark. You don't want it too light. If it's too dark, then the hitters will say it's too dark and they can't see it. If it's too light, the pitchers won't, because they'll say the hitters can see it too much.
Not just any mud will do. Major League Baseball gets it from a super secret spot somewhere in the Delaware River.
The mud is a really interesting thing. They get it from this special place for a reason, because it has almost a consistency of like pudding, I guess. There's no grit to it whatsoever. I rub the balls before every game, because if you let the ball sit for 2 or 3 days, the dirt actually starts to fall off it. And so like these that have dried down here, I'll literally spit in my hand, and I just kind of, you can get them back going again. I could spit on
a stranger. Seems crazy to think this still goes on in every stadium, just like it did for the past 100 years or longer.
I have no idea. I don't know why they haven't built a machine that will do this. I think maybe it's just a tradition of the game.
And that tradition's taking longer than ever.
We're going through more and more baseballs each year, it seems like. Back about 3 years ago, I would say on average it was about 7 to 8 dozen per game. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we're now up to about 10 to 11 dozen per game.
That's in large part because every time a ball hits the dirt, it's taken right out of play.
And I don't know if that's maybe a better thing for baseball. Maybe that says, you know, know, that the pitchers no longer are trying to get an advantage with a scuffed up baseball, but it's amazing to me that even during warm-ups, if a pitcher throws a ball and hits the dirt, the catcher will throw that ball out. And this is warm-ups. This is between inning. That just means one more baseball for me to rub up the next day.
And despite all of Matt's experience and dedication, sometimes he just can't please everybody, or anybody for that matter. Like the time newly inducted Hall of Famer Randy Johnson had a horrible outing, then came back into the clubhouse and gave Matt an earful.
He had some words for me about how light the baseballs were and that perhaps I need to reconsider how I rub them up. And of course, all I said, Randy, of course, for you, whatever you need. And obviously, I rubbed the baseballs the exact same way.
So you'd figure if the big unit was upset, the hitters had to be happy, right? Not exactly.
I bump into Edgar Martinez, and Edgar looks at me. Those balls were so dark today. How could I hit those balls when they're as dark as they are? And I'm like, at that time, I had enough time to think about it, and I just said, Edgar, you know what? The other team seemed to see him just fine, didn't they?
But for most of the past 31 seasons, Matt hasn't heard a whole lot about the balls, which is exactly the way he wants it. And he figures during that time, he's handled over 400,000 of them. What's even more impressive, Matt hasn't missed a single game during his entire career, meaning he's rubbed up every ball that's been played at Safeco Field. So if you're ever lucky enough to catch a foul ball or a home run, Matt hopes you'll keep in mind his handiwork and your hygiene.
The fan doesn't know, like, every ball they catch that I've spit on. And so it's I tell them, go home and wash your hands afterwards after playing with that ball. Because
for the Mariners Sunday Magazine, I'm Josh Kern.
Mr. Rank is great. Balls of fire.
And finally, what a way to end. A little bullpen banter action. Here's Charlie Furbush with one of his new bullpen mates.
Hey, everybody. We're back again with another edition of Bullpen Banter. For the people that have forgotten, my name is Charlie Furbush, and I do host this show. And today, my special guest is fellow reliever David Rollins. How are you today, man?
Doing all right. How are you today?
I'm outstanding. You know, it's good to be back on the show. Good to be here in the land of a thousand lakes, Minnesota. Is this your first time in Minnesota?
It is.
What do you think? You think it's all right so far?
Yeah, it's pretty nice so far. I like the field and the atmosphere. It's pretty cool.
I think it's a great place to be in the summertime. I don't know about the wintertime here in Minnesota. It seems pretty harsh. Where did you grow up, man? Where did it all start for you?
Grew up in East Texas. Carthage is a small town. Everybody knows everybody. Horses, cows, and a lot of trees.
Nice, man. Nice. So, well, in that small East Texas town, how many people did you graduate with in high school? Like, what's your graduating class?
It was like around 260 or something, okay. Something like that.
So, yes, you made your big league debut this year. Dream come true, I'm sure, just like every other baseball player. Run me through what it was like when you finally got the call and you got to call your parents and tell them that you made it.
Well, I mean, it was just one of those phone calls I've been wanting to give for a long time, and, you know, it was really just can't explain the emotions going through my mind, yeah. And everything. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, I was shaking and, like, kind of got teared up a little bit. Yeah. It was an awesome feeling.
If you weren't getting called up to be a pitcher, I want to know what other position you would love to play in the big leagues.
I'd have to say left field.
Left field, all right.
Yeah, I played there in high school and growing up. And believe it or not, I used to play shortstop when I was growing up too. So
the lefty shortstop, I love it.
I knew that wasn't going to work out. Yeah, so I figured left field would be the better spot for me.
I'd say I'd have to stick with first base. You know, I'm not too quick out there in the outfield, but... Did you end up playing any college ball?
I did. I went 3 years at San Jacinto Junior College. I got redshirted my sophomore year because I had two surgeries and mm-hmm. only threw like 18 innings that year. Okay. So I was able to get a redshirt.
What was, growing up in Texas, you got two big league teams there. What was your favorite team to root for, man? Did you get the Stros or the Rangers? Or are you just off the radar and you're like, I love the Brewers?
No, it wasn't the Brewers. No, I was more of a Rangers fan.
Okay.
So it was a lot closer to home, and I mean, it was only like 2 hours away, so we'd go to some of those games, and it was pretty fun.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I got to know how you survived the Texas summer, man. It is just a place that is so hot, humid. What's the trick, man?
Well, it's definitely miserable most of the time because it's really humid. But a lot of water, cold towels, and as least amount of clothes you can wear.
There you go, man. Are you a lake guy or an ocean guy?
I grew up around the lakes, but I was playing in Corpus past 2 years, and we were around the ocean, and I like to fish, and I'd rather ocean fish than freshwater fish. Yeah.
There you go. That's where the biggest fish are, you know? Absolutely. So, you know, yeah, what is the biggest fish you've ever caught, you know, now that we're on this fish topic?
There's a 40-pound black drum.
That doesn't even sound like a fish.
Yeah, I agree. But then...
like a musical instrument, you know?
Yeah, it was big, you know? I mean, tried to stay away from the sharks. Seen a guy catch a 4-foot tiger shark, and I was like, yeah, I'm not getting in the water, so...
Is a 40-pound fish, like, how tall is it?
It was 38 inches.
I'm more of a fly fisherman myself. You ever done any fly fishing?
I haven't, but I want to learn.
Take some patience, because it's definitely not as easy. What's one of your favorite parts of being, you know, in the city of Seattle? Is there something that sticks out to you, whether it's a restaurant, a landmark, just the ball field, everything? Is there one thing that you like the most in Seattle?
The field's pretty sweet. I will say that. Like, that's probably the coolest field. I mean, Yankee Stadium was pretty sweet, but I like Safeco a lot.
Yeah, pitcher's paradise, really. You know what I mean? I would have to agree with you, man. I spent my winters there in Seattle, and it's hard to beat coming to the field and seeing the immaculate Safeco field. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, man, I'm pretty bad. I kind of butchered my last one. I went to a George Strait song and butchered it pretty bad, but I'm going to have to go with Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge. That's going to be my next one.
Okay, so that is amazing. First off, I actually have I have karaoke that song on more than one occasion. The words are simple. They're pretty easy, you know, so it's kind of to the point, but feel like I did that day. Take me to the place I love. Take me all the way. I don't ever want to feel like I did that day. The place I love. Take me all the way. Yeah, there it is. Okay, it brought it back to me. You nailed it. That's great. And that's going to wrap it up, man. Thanks for coming on the show. It's good to be back, everybody. Hope you guys enjoy this week's edition of Bullpen Banter in the Land of a Thousand Lakes.
See you later!